And now, after years of planning, sweating, and going broke, here is the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle.
And it left the media.
Why they would give this man a podcast is anyone's guess.
And there is what could only be a bizarre coincidence or something else.
Welcome to the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle.
Trapped, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Country music and fine moonshine. Finally, a podcast that lets it all hang out.
Let's level with America.
Got your boots? Ready for some whiskey?
These boots are made for walking.
One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
And now, the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle.
Hey, everyone. Jim here, Boots and Whiskey Podcast. Happy Monday. Thank you so much for tuning in with us today. As you can tell by the title of our episode, we have LV Shane here with us today. We're so excited about having him on. This is one of those conversations that I've always wanted to have with him. We discovered or, stumbled across LV, pretty much when everybody else did, when my boy came out on the scene and everybody was like, holy shit, tears running the whole nine yards. And come to find out, that is just the tip of the iceberg with this guy. He is that person in that song that you hear, but there's so much more to him, which I'm honestly surprised about, but I shouldn't be, because if you listen to the last album that he put out, which I think is one of the most underrated of all time in country music, with Backslider, we talk about it a lot. He does have a new one coming out, in 24. So stay tuned for that. But like, you should know that, he is not that guy. My boy is him, but there is more to him. He shouldn't be pigeonholed into that idea, because he is a badass motherfucker. I'm not going to mix words about this dude. He is the balls. I wasn't expecting the candor I got, but you know what? It was a breath of fresh air, and I hope we get him back again in the future, because we had a great time talking with him, and damn, what a cool dude. What a cool dude with a lot of surprises, a lot of stories, a lot of things I would have never have guessed. And if you've never listened to this show before, like, we don't do a lot of digging about our guests beforehand. Obviously, LV Shane, you know who he is, right? Like, he's on, he's on the roster of country people that you should know who they are. So obviously we had a little background of him, but to get deep into it, like, all of these conversations and all these stories we heard from the first time. So if you're here for the first time, thank you so much. We appreciate you being here 100%. So thank you for that. If you want to follow us, go to our socials, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, the whole nine. Bootsandwhiskeyentertainment.com is our website. We have blogs. We have all kinds of stuff. We're building it little by little all the time. We're going to be adding our guests for every season up on there. So, just thanks so much for everybody for everything they've done along the ride here. We do have a new merch store we launched over the weekend, so go check that out over on our Etsy page. It's Boots and Whiskey Swag. The store name, I know, corny as all hell, but whatever. It's cool, man. We got some cool shit up there, so check it out. Without further ado, our conversation with LV Shane, we hope you enjoy. LV, again, thank you so much for being a part of this, man. You're the balls, brother. You are such a cool dude, and it's an honor to call you a friend at this point, my friend. And for everybody else, enjoy the show. You're not going to want to miss this one. Cheers, guys. We want to give a big thank you to our friends over at Off the Rails here in Worcester, Massachusetts. You can find them at offtherailswooster.com. They have a great restaurant, a great music venue. They have everything you would want to feel like in Nashville right here in Central Mass. If you're ever in the area, check out the restaurant, check out the music venue. Again, offtherailswooster.com, 90 Commercial Street, Worcester. Check them out. Hello, hello.
What's up, man?
What's up, Belvy? How are you, my friend?
I'm good, dude. Is this just audio only?
Yeah, man. You don't have to be all dressed up.
Cool. I wasn't going to do that anyway, but my computer ain't working, so I have to do this on my cell phone, so that's perfect.
Yeah, man. Yeah, we're not too high tech here. We probably should be. Probably help viewership, but
bro, I'm not too high tech either. But yeah, I'm here. What's up, baby?
Not much, man. Thanks for being on, man. This is awesome.
No, thank you for having me, man.
I got to say I stumbled across you, obviously, I think when everybody else did, when my boy came out, and man, we're going to get into it, but I still can't not cry when I hear that song.
Man, it still gets me from time to time on stage, but yeah, it's kind of been like, that song was such a blessing and a curse, man. It's
I'm sure.
It was that's a big part of who I am and who I've been over the years, but it definitely pigeonholed us into like this image that I feel like is not been the best representation of who I am. I think everybody just got the best of me, and they didn't get to learn all the stuff that went before that and that has came after that. So we've been working really hard on this sophomore record, and I just finished it last week. I'm super proud of it. I think that people that were there for Backslider are definitely going to be very surprised with the content and the sonic change of Damascus.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. You know, when I am, I'm actually in a similar situation as you, where, you know, my wife, she has a, you know, when I came into the picture, he was 6, and now he's a teenager, right? And, like, everything in that song was just, like, absolutely perfect. You encompassed every feeling a stepfather has, you know, that actually, you know, because there's stepfathers out there that don't give a shit, right? But those that do, like, you, every word was spot on.
Well, man, I'm not going to sit here and take all the credit for that. I had three real good friends sitting on the porch with me that night that, you know, definitely very much understand my situation, and 3 out of 4 of us had been in a similar situation, either with a girlfriend, with a kid, or being a stepchild themselves. Russell Sutton, Lee Starr, Nick Columbia, who, you know, we weren't even supposed to write that night. We just started talking. Somebody sent me a Facebook post that said, I don't have a stepson. I have a son that was born before I met him. And we just, you know, started talking about what it's like to be in that situation. And my boy was born. And then, it wasn't too long ago, a little over a year and a half, 2 years ago, I got back with Lee and Nick, and we ended up writing Pill that we just put out, which is another heart wrencher for me. But it's been our best performing song this year that we've put out.
Yeah, it's a great tune, man. Like it really is. It's something.
Well, that was that's dude. I only know how to do things one way. Like I either tell my story the way that I experienced it, or I tell a story that I know well from someone else's experience, and I just as the narrator, I put myself in first person most of the time.
Sure.
And try to be that character and tell that story in a way that I would hope they would see fit.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you had mentioned that, you know, the world got a, you know, an image of you in their head with my boy. So who was, or who is LV Shane before the popularity of my boy and, you know, that image comes out?
Well, most of my closest friends would explain me as a tornado. I'm a hyperactive, accident prone hillbilly. So I don't know. I can't keep my head on straight, man. Hey, and I know this is boots and whiskey, right?
Yes, sir.
I don't have on boots and I don't have any whiskey, but I got some bourbon right here that I'm about to sip on while I'm talking to you. So
that's the best. That's right. I don't have my boots on either. I have my Hey Dudes on, so I get it.
We'll put a little bit more in here for the doctor. There we go. We're good. All right. Man, dude, I grew up going to church on Sundays with my mama, singing hymns, getting home and a skunky smell floating around the holler and beer cans laying around the driveway and Lynyrd Skynyrd or Steve Earle on the radio. And that was my dad, you know, working on one of his old semi trucks or some old car or truck that he had at the time. So Sundays really captured, I feel like, what made me who I am for the most part. Those days were spent, you know, praising the Lord with my mom and my dad's family at church, and learning the best of the four letter words, working on shit with my dad when I got home. You know,
sure.
Yeah, just grew up the kid of a truck driver and a factory worker, and never really always been kind of an outside dog. Never really felt like I fit in anywhere, and that used to bother me. But these days, I've definitely embraced it, and I'm just like, maybe it's just getting older, but I just don't give as much of a shit as I used to. I'm just, here I am. This is who I is. So,
you know, that's the way to be, man. You know, there's so much in this world that sucks. So it's, you know, might as well just be who you are and, you know, really fuck everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, that is definitely the way it should be, man. I just, you know, there's so much division in the world these days, it seems like, based off of the most silly things. And, you know, I'm a people person. Don't get me wrong. Like, I want people to enjoy my presence and enjoy what I put out in the world as an artist or songwriter or whatever. But at the same time, you have to get to a point where, you know, you realize a lot of smiles are fake. A lot of pats on the back are, you know, don't have much substance to them, and you find the people that really love and care about you and believe in what you're doing, whether it's, you know, going after it to be a contractor or a movie star. You know, you find those people that are in your corner, and you ride it out with them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, growing up in the kind of way you did, at what point does your own music and writing songs and playing a guitar and all that, when does that come in?
Man, I probably started trying to string words together when I was 7 or 8 years old. My aunt was married to this guy that bought a big farm right down the road from my house. So I would just go, like, walk around the cow fields by myself and with my .22 rifle and, like, try to kill a rabbit or something, you know. And I would just, like, walk around and try to string some words together, write my first songs. Started playing guitar when I was about 12. That same aunt had bought a guitar or traded a Tannenbed for a guitar, an old Fender flat top that I worked one summer hauling hay and saved up the money to buy that from her. And I learned old school way, man. We didn't have YouTube back then. So it was like guitaretabs.com. And learning tabs. My great grandmother, who I wrote a song on this next record called Does Heaven Have a Creek for, my only solo write on either one of my records, but she taught me E, A, and B, and she handed me a Roger Miller's Greatest Hits CD, and she said, you can sing any Roger Miller song with those three chords. And so I went, you know, I started digging in and, like, trying to learn how to play and sing at the same time, and then, you know, high school band, college, me and a couple buddies had a group called 88. We were all born in 88, and we practiced on Highway 88 in my hometown and played little bar gigs. And, you know, I don't know. I guess it's really been the only thing in my life that's been a constant is just, sure, like, pursuing words more than anything, man. Like, college, I was writing a lot of short stories, doing poetry, stuff like that, entering contests for that, and won a few of those. So that was the first time that I ever got any, like, recognition for my writing that kind of sparked me to really dig in and start being a songwriter, you know?
Yeah. Now, so once you get older and, you know, get out, what were you doing before you went into music, you know, as a full-time kind of gig?
A lot of drugs and a lot of partying. Hey,
you know, that's what makes the best songs, man.
No, man. I definitely there was quite a few years in my early 20s. So it's been a little bit of a wild ride. I mean, right out of high school, I went into the ministry for a couple years. I kind of bounced around the South, mostly Tennessee, Kentucky. Preaching as an evangelist, a lot of that just didn't sit right with me. I felt like I was regurgitating a lot of things that I'd heard all my life instead of, you know, really talking about things that I actually believed. And so that, you know, that left a little room for the devil to wiggle in. And, sure. And then, so that kind of led to the other thing, you know, the drugs, alcohol, the party. And I won't say I'm completely sober or anything these days. I'm having a drink right now and I like to smoke a little bit of weed every now and then, but I don't think that makes you a bad person. I'm definitely away from.
With keeping that Central Mass vibe going, we have to thank our friends over at the DCU Center. Again, here in Worcester, DCUCenter.com. They are the premier venue here in Central Massachusetts. They are a mid-size arena. They're the home of the Worcester Railers, the Massachusetts Pirates. Numerous concerts, numerous events. Check them out, DCUCenter.com. They are at 50 Foster Street, right here in Worcester. Cheers.
All the hard stuff. But yeah, man, I was working any kind of job that was blue collar. All I knew how to do was, you know, turn a wrench for the most part or do farm work, hard physical labor. So I was working garages. I've did a little bit of restaurant industry stuff, but farm work. One time my rehab was my dad getting me a job in the dead of heat July, shoveling soybeans out of a grain bin in Caneyville, my hometown, at Bryant Farms mill there in town. So it was a lot of like 6 months at this place, 3 months at that place, can't figure out what I want to be when I grow up. And the dream that I have of being an artist and songwriter is so far away, there's no way I could ever imagine even getting in that, headed towards that direction. So it took a long time.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a typical guy thing. You know, I think throughout all my 20s, I don't think I ever had a job that was longer than 6 months.
Well, we're so this bullshit that you should go to college and get a degree and be a freaking, I don't know, forensic pathologist or some bullshit because CSI was popular on TV. And, you know, but I tell you what, man, it ain't gonna be long where when people start asking, you know, what should I get into to make really good money? You're gonna start telling people you should go be a plumber. You should go work with a plumber and learn how to be a plumber, or a contractor or a welder. Or, you know, I got caught up in that race. Yeah, I did go to college for creative writing and English literature, but I only went for a year and a half before I, you know, started studying, you know, weed and girls, and you know that just led down a slippery slope.
Both are very, very high degrees you can accomplish.
but no, man, I mean, I just, you know, it wasn't until I got a little older and I had $40,000 in student loan debt that I realized how much of a scam that was for people like myself. And I met my wife when I was like 24, and I quit everything cold turkey except for cigarettes and focused on our relationship. Didn't touch a guitar for like 3 years after we got together.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a weird time. I just kind of gave up on it altogether.
Now, why did you find it as a distraction?
Well, man, I think it kind of went hand in hand with the lifestyle I'd been living. I was playing at parties, playing bars.
Sure, yeah.
So that was one thing, but two, I just got to the point where I just kind of gave in to the American nightmare. It was like, let's just get married, have kids, work a steady job, and you know, the thing that we're sold is the American dream, man. And I feel like, dude, I'm not being down on it. Like, if that's what you do, I've been there. I get it. But I feel like too often we're like told that we need to do this certain thing a certain way, and it deters so many people from going after what they love. And you know, even with me, the biggest hindrance in going after what you love is money. You know, you gotta make some money. So it wasn't until I decided, okay, well, I'm gonna do what I gotta do to make money, but every waking hour that I'm not doing that, I'm going to try to book shows. I'm going to try to, you know, write songs and go to Nashville. And it's just, you know, it's amazing how when you are honest with yourself about your strengths or weaknesses and you start going after something that you know is in you, how God will show up with people to put in your life that can give you a little bit of encouragement or even gas money for the journey, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So from the time you meet your wife to the time you give a stab at Idol, how long was that?
Idol. Let's see. We've been together, that was 2015. I'm 35 now, so that was 8 years ago. So we'd been together about 2 years. And look, I never wanted to do any of those damn TV shows. The only people that those TV shows do any good for are the judges. They fill up their bank accounts. But my mom really wanted me to do this. So The Voice had two auditions left, one in L.A., one in New York. My mom started a GoFundMe without asking me. And she called me and she was like, I started a GoFundMe for you to go to L.A. and try out for The Voice. I was like, damn, Mom, don't do that. You know, well, she did it. And within a few hours, man, there was like $3,500 in there. So I was like, oh, shit. Okay, people want me to do this. So I went to L.A. Me and Mandy went to L.A., spent a few days out there, did The Voice. They said no. I was rolling back into Nashville, and a friend of mine, Precious Harris, who is an angel in this city of Nashville for people who are just coming into town and trying to find their people. She had a lead on a private audition for American Idol and asked me if I'd do it. And I was like, you know, what the hell? Let's do it. So I went and did it. They said no. As I was walking out the door, somebody else was like, hey, come back here. And I tried to sing an Adele song, and the person that told me no was like, you need to try to sing something you can actually sing, not something that's so rangy. And I was sick that day, and it pissed me off. So when they asked me to sing another song, I sang Chris Johnson Brothers song, a Chris Stapleton song called Barely Alive, which is the hardest song I know how to sing in out of any of them. And it was kind of a kiss my ass moment, but they said, yeah, let's go. So we did the Idol thing, and you know, really, it was cool to do the Idol thing just because I was so green and just, you know, a greenhorn hillbilly, had never been anywhere in his life, and I got to sing Long As I Can See the Light in Dolby Theater for Jennifer Lopez. That was pretty cool. I just looked directly in her eyes the whole time. And no, I'm just kidding. I couldn't do that. It'd be way too intimidating. I tell you what I gained the most from that, though, was Keith Urban. All my life, I was the guy with the guitar, right? And if you come up in small town, you could sing, you play guitar. People at the parties, they always want you to play and sing. So nobody had ever looked at me and been like, cool, whatever. Keith was just like, I mean, I could tell he liked what I did, but he was like, I'm also singing in front of somebody that just watched Justin Timberlake and Chris Stapleton singing that at the CMAs. You know, right. So he's like, cool, bro. You can sing, but can you do A, B, C, and D when it comes time to do it? Can you be up for 50 hours because you've been doing radio shows and then go entertain a crowd of 25,000 people at an arena? And it was the first time that anybody had ever looked at me and be like, you can sing, so what? I was like, damn, okay. So then I actually talked to the producers on the show because I just didn't really want to be there anymore. And they ended up dropping me the next day. And I went back home and I was like, okay, I can't go back to work at the mill. Sorry, I'm going off on a tangent here.
No, it's perfect.
I was like, I just tell myself, I was like, I can't go back at the mill. I just sang at Dolby Theater. I got to get more of that in my life. So I went to work for my buddy's dad, who owns a production company there in town. I just went to him. I was like, man, all I want to do is be around music. I'll huff gear. I'll build stages. I'll run cables. Whatever the hell you want me to do, I just want to be around music. And I did that for a year. And then a friend of mine started inviting me to come down to Nashville to write songs, man. And then about 6 months later, we wrote My Boy. And a couple years after that, Pub Deal. And a couple years after that, Record Deal. And now we're just out here doing our thing, man.
Dude, you have such an incredible, like, from nothing to something story in the world.
Well, you know, I feel like I was blessed to have, you know, I didn't start all this till I was 27 years old, you know, like really going after it. And I feel very blessed these days to have had the life experiences I had before I got here, because I see so many of these young cats coming up, and young cats that have far surpassed what I'm doing, you know, in record time, that, you know, they get thrown to the wolves and they haven't had time to really learn who they are yet. And sometimes it reflects in the music, you know, especially if Nashville gets a hold of them. But I think just being where I come from and growing up the way I grew up and being through the things I've been through gave me a headstrong, you know, fire that, you know, this record we're working on, man. I mean, I had to fight and claw to get it, just to get people on board for me to record the music. And now that it's recorded, you know, they're like, you know, now they're coming to me and be like, okay, I understand what you were going for, now that they're getting to hear some stuff. So, you know, hopefully everybody else hears what I'm going for too, man. I'm just, I robbed this from Chris Stapleton, but he said it in an interview one time. I'm just trying to tell the truth as loud as I can.
Yeah.
I'm a little shaken right now, because I literally just had a fuck it moment a while ago where, you know, I've always been pretty humble and I don't like to ask people for help or anything, but this record's got a lot of stuff on it, man, that means something to me. I'm talking about my struggles and people I know struggles with addiction. I'm talking about my friend who's incarcerated for reckless homicide because he was a felon in possession of a firearm defending himself. You know, there's songs about real topics on here, and I want people to hear it, so I'm willing to do anything. So I literally just sent this the record over to Stapleton and to Church via email right before I hopped on here. I did some digging and got some people, convinced a couple people to give me some email addresses, and I'm just like, hey man, here it is. I'm tired of being overlooked. I know you guys have been there. What's up?
That's awesome. That's balls, man. That's the way to do it. Because you know what? You know, I gotta say, like, I thought, you know, what was it? 2021. It's been what, about two years now, when Backslider came out.
Yeah.
I thought that album, right? And I'm not just saying this because you're on the phone here with me. I've said it to other people. I think that was one of the best and most underrated country albums in the last 5 years.
Man, you know, I'm not gonna say I disagree with you just because I got an ego like anybody else, but I tried to be honest in that music, and I tried to be creative, and I tried to let the songwriters and the musicians do what they wanted to do on that record. And I feel like the industry, you know, we got the My Boy win, and I was really happy for that, but I felt like the record got overlooked.
Yeah, and it certainly did.
I just, you know, but also, man, it's partially my fault too. You know, I love that record. I'll always love that record. It's my first baby, but it was also a watered down version of who I am and where I come from. I hinted at some things, you know, love cold beer and cheap smoke, but I didn't just come out and say I smoke weed, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but all that's gone now. It's like I wanted to prove to myself and prove to the powers that be that you can be authentic and still play the game. And I just ain't got no time for games, man. If I can't get all that behind me, what I can get behind me and what I've realized since then is I can go in a 250 cap room, and if I can fill that room up, I'm confident that myself and my guys that are on stage with me, because we believe in what we're doing and we know that we're telling the truth and we're having a good time, I'm confident that I can make people there have a good time. So I'm just trying to build it like Noah's Ark, baby, two by two. Two people come, next time they're going to bring two people. So,
yeah, you know, I got to, you know, tip my hat to you for that, because there's a lot of artists out there that think that, you know, oh, well, the first time I play in this place, it's going to be full. And it's like, that's not always the case.
No, man, it was a hard realization. You know, we came out with a number one. And in your mind, when you're a kid dreaming of having a number one record one day, you think it's all crystal and chandeliers and shit and private jets.
Yeah.
And then you go out and set up a tour with 1,500 plus cap rooms and you get 200 people in there and you're like, damn, this don't look good.
Right.
But you know what? You know what looks good is a 200 cap room with 200 people in it. That shit's awesome. I would literally take that. I've got to play arenas. I've got to play sheds. I would love to do it again. Don't get me wrong. But you take a 200 to 500 cap room full of people that are there for your music and want to see you and your band put it on. That's a hell of a show, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's funny you say that because it's, I can only imagine, you know, cause we work with a venue up here that, you know, I think the room cap is like 400 and, you know, we've seen some acts that have come through with number one songs and half the room's full. You know, it's.
Now we're going to thank our friends on the North Shore, the Porch Southern Fair and Juke Joint. Our buddy Jonathan Post is the head chef and owner of the Porch. They are at 175 Rivers Edge Drive, right in Medford, Massachusetts. Don't want to miss this place. They have some of the best food in the region. Jonathan has brought his Nashville roots here to New England with the food, with the hospitality, and most of all, the music. Check them out, theporchsouthern.com.
It's kind of a bizarre thing, especially what you were just saying, when you know, you have that number one and you step out on stage in a room that holds way more people and it's half full, you know, and it's like, oh shit. But yeah.
I feel like people are just tired of the bullshit too, man. It's like Eric did that interview here all back that, you know, got some people all up in arms, but that's church's thing too, you know. But yeah. But you know, he said there's all kinds of artists out here that got, you know, 6-7 number ones, but they can't sell out their high school gym, you know. Right. And I feel like I put a song on this new record called Chicken Shit, and it's kind of about that. And it's like, I'm not calling people chicken shit. I'm just saying, don't be chicken shit, man. Like, I love artists. I love people. I might not like what you do, but I respect you because you're doing exactly what I wanted to do too. You're just trying to make a living doing what you love to do, man.
Yeah.
But don't. There's more than one way to skin the cat, brother. You don't have to give in to the pressures of people telling you what you should record and what you should sing and what you should do. It might make you a little bit of money in you know, off of radio, but I made better money playing shows last year than I did off of the radio. So build a crowd, man. If you build a crowd, they're going to be there when everybody else is gone. Look at George Strait. Right. Look at Alan Jackson. Look at Toby Keith. Yep. When everybody else is gone, it's like, oh, that's old news. I guarantee you they can still sell tickets.
They sure can. They sure can. I mean, we just saw that with Toby. You know, look at all of his health shit that just went on. And, you know, he puts those shows out in Vegas on sale and they're gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's wild. It's wild.
Yeah, man. I just wish more artists would just dig their heels in, you know. And especially some of these new cats coming up that, you know, they get a little bit of that TikTok cocaine, yep. You know, and they blow up real quick and ride that high that comes down so fast if you ain't careful. But you know, you'll hear some of them doing something really cool, and then you know, people get a hold of them, and next thing you know, you hear it, and it's like, well, wait a minute, this is starting to sound like all the other shit I'm hearing.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, it's true. And you know, I think that's what I love about you the most is that, you know, even with, you know, when Backslider came out, and you know that sound, you know, everything that has come out since then has gotten a little more, I say, aggressive. And I don't mean it in a negative way, but like, you know, like badass, you know, like, you know, teaming up with Cadillac 3 for Hillbilly and then getting on the, you know, the Stone Cold Country compilation there for the Stones. Like,
yeah, man,
you know, your version of, oh, Jesus Christ, my
Sympathy
my,
for the Devil.
Thank you. Yeah. Sympathy for the Devil is just awesome.
Well, man, that's a big thanks to Robert Deaton. You know, my manager, Clarence Spalding, and Brian Wolf, they ask Robert if I could be on the project. And, you know, I think I might have got overlooked at first, but then, you know, Robert put on the record one night, he says, and just sit there and listen to my record. And he understood after that, you know, and he reached out And they told me to send five songs. My first choice was Sympathy for the Devil. I feel like that song is so misunderstood. Like, they got labeled as devil worshipers and everything when they put out. But if you listen to the lyrics, man, that song is just about the atrocities that we've committed over the years that we use the devil as a scapegoat for.
Yeah.
So that song, I love the message of that song, but I was super proud to be a part of that project and get to work with those guys. And they got a documentary, I think, coming out about it not too long from now. We'll see.
Nice. So is that, how did you jump in with the Cadillac 3 for Hillbilly?
Man, they invited me. Another friend over at management is friends with Neil, with Neil's wife over there. And they wanted somebody to come out on the road and ride with them. So I went out and rode with them. And we ended up, we were struggling to get something, but my name, one of my aliases is Hillbilly. And Neil had seen that somewhere, and I got it tattooed on me and shit. So he's like, I got this idea. And I was like, now we're speaking my language. And then they were like, we're making a rock record, and this would be perfect. I was like, let's go. I mean, dude, I got turned on to Cadillac 3 the same time I got turned on to Blackberry Smoke.
Yeah.
And that shit was all I listened to for a solid year. So those guys are literally, I mean, I tell them to this day, those guys are my heroes. And at a, you know, to get an opportunity to hop in a room and do a song with artists that you're a huge fan of and that you grow to love as people is just it's always going to be an amazing thing.
Yeah. No. How did you? Because you opened for Blackberry a few times, haven't you? Did you do a tour with them?
Yeah. So I went out and opened up for them acoustic a few times. They I'm with the same booking agency, Wasserman, out of Nashville, and just went out and sang for their crowds acoustic, and dude, their crowd is they're killer, and those guys are badasses. Charlie is the only one that I really got to spend very much time with, but what a just great human being and a very underrated guitar player.
Yeah,
great, like fantastic guitar player, and yeah. That was another one of those pinch me moments, man. I got to go out and row. I'd like to do some more shows with those guys.
Now, do you have like a bucket list kind of, you know, either opening slot or whatever, or you know, people to work with in the industry that you haven't yet?
Yeah, man. I mean, as far as country would go, I would love to do something with Stapleton. I'd love to do something with Church. Jelly, man, I just love what Jelly's about.
Yeah.
And the people that he's talking to. I sent him Pill a few weeks before it came out, and it was just like, hey man, I just want you to know we give a shit about the same people, you know, because he's got that her song, or she, I'm sorry. And so yeah, so I mean, those would be the top three right now. I'd love to do something with Alabama. Well, it's not Alabama Shakes anymore, but Brittany Howard.
Yeah.
Molly Tuttle, Billy Strings. And there's so many, Blackberry Smoke. There's so many of them out there, man.
You know, speaking of Jelly, have you seen his most recent live show?
I have not got a chance to see the full production.
No, we saw him over the summer, and it was wild. Like, I thought it was at, like, three different concerts at once, and I thought it was at church on Sunday morning. It was, like, the most wild ride for a show.
I've heard that it is absolutely insane, and that is one of the best shows you can go see. I've yet to see it, but he's definitely creating a church for the, I'm careful the way I say that, because thou shalt have no other idols before me, but I believe he's just creating a space for people who feel like they've been shunned and forgotten and pushed to the side. And, you know, I definitely am one of those people. So I feel like that's why it resonates with me.
Yeah. I get it. I totally get it. You know, and, you know, the crowds he brings gets it too. You know, it's great to see.
I love that he says the windshield is bigger than the rear view for a fucking reason.
Yeah. That's like the greatest quote in the history of, you know, the spoken word, I think, because it's true.
It is. It's great, man.
So for this album that you just finished up, what is the timetable looking like for that? to be fully released?
It'll be out in the spring.
Okay.
We got some shows we're doing with Kid Rock, Al Dean, and some other artists. Gavin Adcock, I believe, who is my son is a big fan of, who I just started listening to, and I really like what he's doing too. I believe Oliver was supposed to be on those shows, but I think he ended up doing something different. But so we're going to try to get the record out right around the time that we start those shows.
Nice.
And in February right now, I'm trying to put together a small club show to go out and do like a more intimate setting, tell the stories behind the songs, play the record in sequence, you know?
Damn. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, We know a couple of places up here that would be perfect for that.
Where are you at?
I'm in Massachusetts. I'm like right on the Rhode Island line.
I've not spent much time up there, man, but when I do, I love it.
Yeah, it's a cool little place. You know, it's definitely different from a lot.
You know what? You know what? Us below the Mason-Dixon line, folks grow up having these preconceived notions about people from the north, but the more I get up there, I'm like, damn, I like these people. They just tell you how it is.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, it's the same way. You know, here up in the northeast, you know, we have a, you know, growing up and whatnot, we have a different view of people below the Mason-Dixon line. So
it's weird, right? It's like I went to New York for the first time last year. I spent 3 days in the city by myself because I just wanted to experience it. And you grow up hearing that people in New York are assholes and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, damn, the only time anybody was an asshole to me is when I got in their way. So the next day I was like, anytime I get in somebody's way, I'm going to act like they're in my way. So I was like, excuse me, man. And they were like, oh shit, my bad. I'm like, oh, this shit works. Reverse psychology.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Cause it's like growing up, you know, you and I are pretty much the same age, you know, you're younger than me, but growing up, it was always.
So I think I would be totally remiss if I didn't mention our friends over at 10thWhiskey.com. That's 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirit Company. They're out of Vail, Colorado. Great, great friends of ours. We don't like bourbon here at the Boots and Whiskey Podcast, and they make the absolute best bourbon I've ever tasted in my entire life. And I'm not saying that because they've been great to us. They have the best bourbon, the best rye I've ever tasted in my entire life. So check them out, 10thWhiskey.com. Tell them the Boots and Whiskey Podcast sent you. Cheers. Also, don't forget our friends over at HogwashandRhinestones.com. Our good friend Ray is the owner over there. She makes incredible clothing that you've seen all over the place, from Nashville to Boston to everywhere in between. Some really big names have worn her stuff. That's Hogwash, the letter N, rhinestones.com. Check them out. Tell them the Boots and Whiskey Podcast sent you. You won't be disappointed. Check them out. Hogwashandrhinestones.com.
He's like, oh, you know, those stupid backwards hillbillies in the South.
You know, like, hey, some of that's true.
And it's like, yeah, well, no, of course. But, I mean, we have that up here, too, so it's fine. You know, but the more and more I talk to people from, you know, doing this and, you know, that live below the Mason-Dixon line, it's like, these people are just like us. You know, there's no difference except for, you know, geography.
Hey, man, when it comes down to it, the rich are rich, and the rest of us are just trying to live our lives and be happy, man.
That's true. That's 100% true. What?
That's all there is to it, man. That's my people, man. I don't care what color you are, who you love. I don't give two shits about any of the political or what's became political bullshit. I just love people, man.
Yeah.
And I just want to be honest and tell stories. I obviously have knee-jerk reactions to things that I see on the news and you know, the internet based on how I grew up and everything, but I've been blessed to make friends from all over the place that have very differing views and opinions about things that keep me in check and that I can keep in check. And I'm trying to create an environment much like the one I seen at Luck Reunion this year, where you can see somebody standing there with piercings all in their face right beside a, you know, a starched jean cowboy with a cowboy hat on that just left the ranch, you know?
Yep.
That's what I want to see at the end of the day.
Yeah. Now I got a few things, and again, I think a few more things I wanted to ask you before we hop off here. And again, I think thank you so much for joining us and shooting the shit. It's been a lot of fun.
No, thank you.
Now, so what was it like to make your Opry debut?
Oh man, I pissed 17 times in 45 minutes.
I'm sure.
I got a tattoo on my left hand that says walk slow. My right hand says live fast. Live fast is just take chances, and walk slow means take it in. And right before I walked out on stage, Clarence Spalding, who runs Maverick Management that I'm with, put his hand on my shoulder and he said, walk slow, buddy. And that just chilled me out. And then I went out there and I sang my songs. And I would say that the Opry was one of the places where I started really finding my purpose. You know, that was another thing with Backsliders. I didn't really know my purpose yet. I was just trying to put the most authentic, original songs that I'd written on an album, create a concept out of it, and roll with it. Mm. And then after that, moments like the Opry and just seeing connect with people was the things that really pointed me in the direction of who I wanted to speak for, speak to, and speak about.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And, you know, we kind of touched on it a little earlier, but we'll get into it now. You know, because we are the Boots and Whiskey Podcast, what are your boots and what is your whiskey of choice?
Look, man, I scoot and boogie quite a bit on stage. I would say boot scoot and boogie, but I used to do that. I wore cowboy boots all my life, and I got tired of rolling my damn ankles. You know what I got on when I don't have cowboy boots on? It's just a pair of Vans, and that's what I got on right now. So nice. I'm also an old, you know, small town skater punk kid. So that was part of it. So I'm rocking the Vans most of the time these days. But other than that, as far as whiskey goes, you know, I'm from Kentucky, so I ain't drinking no whiskey. I'm drinking bourbon.
Yeah.
The bourbon of choice, it, you know, when we're out on the road, like if we got a bottle backstage, it's usually Bullet.
Yeah.
But I love Wild Turkey. You know, I Woodford Reserve. My favorite bourbon in the world is Elmer T. Lee, which is very hard to find. And if you do find it, you got to pay for it. So I don't drink that very often.
Yeah. 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 There's a lot of things out there that are like that now, and it's insane. Some of the prices on the secondary market.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, man. It's like, I ain't giving $500 for a bottle of shit that I got to take a drink of and grin real hard and say, damn, that's good.
Right, right.
But if somebody's got a bottle and they want to share it, I'll drink some.
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Sweet, man. Well, thanks again for chilling and hanging out and shooting the breeze. It's been great to get to know you and all that. And we can't wait for the record to come out next year.
Yes, sir. I'm looking forward to it, man. It's Damascus. Before we hop off here, I want everybody to understand what it's about. You know, obviously, like I said, with that first record, when I finished that, I was like, what the hell do I do now? So I felt like I was on my own little road to Damascus, trying to figure that out. But also, Damascus is the type of steel where you take a bunch of different types of steel and you heat them up and you forge them together. And you've probably seen it before. It makes these really cool, intricate lines in the metal. It's really beautiful, strong blade. And what I never want to do is put the same record out twice. So this record is very much, you know, I like to say I'm a Heartland Rock singer. Yeah. I grew up on Heartland Rock and gospel, and the topics that I'm talking about and stuff, you know, country is a very broad term these days.
Sure is.
But I wanted to pull from all my influences. I didn't want to leave anybody out. I didn't want to leave Foo Fighters out, or Mac Miller, or Steve Earle, or Eric Church, or anybody. So this record is heavily influenced by a lot of different genres and different artists. And you know, with Backslider, I dipped into my early influences. But now I spend a lot of time listening to Tyler Childers, Brent Cobb, Mac Miller, and this even a hardcore band, these guys called Military Gun. Military spelled I-E instead of Y. Just like trying to dig out there and find stuff that I thought was cool and see if it sparked some kind of inspiration to interject melodically or sonically in the music.
Yeah. Now, you said Heartland Rock, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Now, what is that?
Well, I mean, I grew up on like Steve Earle and Mellencamp and Petty and and CCR. So it's like, it's okay. to me, Heartland Rock is about, it's just about blue collar working class people and the struggles that they endure, the alcohol, the addiction, the no money, the, old fashioned way of growing up, hard work, bruised knuckles, callous hands, stuff like that's the people that are important to me. So, I live in the country market. I'm not denouncing country in any way, but to me, that's more of what we're doing here.
Yeah, no, I found it funny because so what you call Heartland Rock, growing up, it was Southern Rock to me and to us.
Yeah,
up here.
Yeah.
All right, so it's same thing, just different wordage, verbiage.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Sweet. Oh man, LV, I've had a blast chatting with you, and hopefully we can get you up here sooner rather than later, man.
Well, I'm trying to fill the calendar up next year, so be looking out for me.
Sounds good, man. Sounds good. And as soon as, when you get up here, we'll be there, man.
All right, buddy. God bless y'all. Have a good day.
You too, bud. Thanks.
See you, man.
Bye.
Dallas Jackson here with Tipsy Music. Artists, are you tired of getting $5 to play Freebird? How are you getting fans to engage with your own music? Venmo and Linktree are just temporary solutions until now. Tipsy Music is the one-stop shop for live music to make your life easier and monetize your set list. Tipsy takes Venmo, Apple Pay, Google Pay, and even credit cards all through your unique Tipsy QR code. Best part is no app to download, so fans can pay you quickly and get back to getting tipsy while watching you do what you do best. Sign up for free today at tipsymusic.com. That's T-I-P-S-E-E music.com at Tipsy Music on all socials. Long live live music.
Well, there you have it, everyone. Our conversation with LV Shane. What a great time. Dude, I know I said it at the beginning 108 times, but what a cool ass dude, man. And what a genuine person. Like, this is the kind of dude that, you would expect to see, whether it was at the bar or at work or whatever. Like, this dude is the real deal when it comes to, not letting fame, dictate who you are, because I don't think he's done that. I don't think he's allowed the stardom and the people he's, been associated with or open for, whatever, making an Opry debut and, still being as humble as he is. This is how you do it. If you're an artist or an up and coming artist, this is how you want to be. You want to fucking kick ass, take names, shut your mouth, and just do it. Do it your way. Don't kowtow, if that's even the word, to the machine. Because you know what? If the machine wants you, they'll find you. The perfect example of this shit right here. My boy goes crazy. And honestly, I think it's fair to say without that song, you don't know. You're not listening to this episode. He is not on this show without that song. He doesn't make his opera debut without that song. But you know what? That song doesn't even begin to give you a taste of who LV Shane is, like we said at the beginning. And you heard that in this conversation. So I think that's the most important thing. So again, I know I've gone off on a tangent. I've been talking about my conversation with LV for days now since I've had it. And what a great dude he is. This is the kind of guy you want to be friends with, I think. Then that's it. End of discussion. So thank you for being here. Like I said, go check us out on our socials. We appreciate everything and everyone. We have two more episodes coming out this week. We have Donis Morris coming out on Wednesday, singer-songwriter out of Texas, another super cool-ass dude. And then we have the wonderfully talented and super sweet Dana Powell on Friday. So we thank you for being here. Check those episodes out when they come out. And, if you don't come back, well, we hope you do. But if not, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We hope to see you back here Wednesday. Always here at the Boots of Whiskey podcast, guys. It's all about real people, real stories, real country. Thank you so much. We'll see you on Wednesday. Good night, y'all. Cheers.